Hello, everyone, and welcome back. It's Richard Lannan for Set for Success, where we discuss what you need to do to be successful in your business, career, and life. And I think one of the shows I mentioned that we're always after a roadmap and how it would be really nice to have an actual roadmap to where you could actually know the peaks, valleys, and all the detours that happen in your business, well, career, and life. So there's a little bit of extended introduction. I was having a conversation a while back with various guests about the gig economy. You know, so obviously, you know what I had to do. I had to go on the internet and then start to research and read up a bit on the gig economy. And you know what that means. I'm going to be talking about it now. So personally, I have spent my life in the consulting industry, going from gig to gig. So I sort of understand the gig a little bit. So I'm a little bit less concerned. However, if you grew up a regular job full time and you worked for somebody all your life, then you might actually be a bit concerned about this, especially if you just found yourself in having to change employment. And then what about your kids? Like if you got millennials for kids or even, you know, older Gen Xers, but really probably more millennials, I mean, they're really talking about the gig economy too. So I was reading the other day that by 2020, the gig economy will make up about 40% of all jobs in America. Now, in this case here, I was talking probably the U.S., but really we could probably talk about North America too. And the gig economy is already pretty big in other areas in the world. So that's a huge number when you start to factor it in. Would it really be that big of an impact in our country? So we'll see. So I started wondering a little bit more about what the economy meant, what it means to people, young people and old people, and the adjustments that we have to be made, and how would you survive a life going from gig to gig to gig? So there's a lot of articles on the internet, and obviously I'm going to recommend to you that you go out and you actually, you know, Google gig economy and see what shows up. You'll see some great stuff from all the major publications in the world. I know for me, the gig economy is big because I've always looking for my next gig in strategic planning, business analysis, leadership development. I'm going to give you a little bit in my background. And that often means that, you know, I also have to do speaking and training and coaching in those areas too, you know, because that's what I try to do, help organizations become set for success. I did learn one important thing, and I think this has sort of helped me in my career and in my business. And so I want to share that with you now before we get started. It was called the 1-7-45 business rule. And the idea is that you'd actually contact one person a day, provide content on the internet at least every 7 days, and be doing something big every 45 days. So you're attending an event, you're putting on an event, you're doing something, so you're always out there. And the whole idea is that for your own professional development, but to ensure that you're always moving your business and your work forward. And that's probably pretty important in the gig economy too. And we're going to find out a little bit. So I might digress a little bit on that topic, but I just thought I would bring that in, a little bit of a business rule, something that was learned. So here's what we're going to do. I started to actually phone around some of the CEOs I know in town, and I sort of hooked into one CEO that I've gotten to know. I'm starting to bug him and calling my regular friend, Glenn Bueller. He's been on the show before, and he actually sort of kicked this whole topic off. So Glenn, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Richard. Great to be here.
Yeah, so you are a CEO, aren't you?
Some would say, yeah.
You are a CEO, the chief operating... No, chief executive officer.
Yeah, chief operating officer. Those guys are the guys who do the work. That's not me.
That's not you at all. So Glenn, just real quickly, we'll do a high recap. I'm not going to spend a lot of time in terms of your personal history and that, because you've been on the show before. Who do you CEO for?
And so I've got a number of different organizations or businesses, I guess. The 10 group of companies, today's Executive Network, we're a big executive networking organization in town, and we own a number of different companies. And then also Oxygen Technical Services, a big technology company here in Winnipeg.
Now, is Oxygen Technical Services an infrastructure company? Like when you say technical services, what do you mean?
Great question. Well, first of all, with the name Oxygen, we usually get called to replace air tanks, but... but what we really do is we are the outsourced IT provider for a lot of Manitoba small businesses, small and medium-sized businesses. And for those who have an IT department, we augment and work with that too.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're out working with other companies. So
absolutely.
And you're also a young CEO. Hope you don't mind me saying that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you probably experience a lot of what's happening in business right now. So I'm going to hit you with the very first question. I think the very first question is a simple one. What is the gig economy?
Well, simple question, and I've got a bit of a preamble leading up to the
That's
answer.
That's great. Give me the preamble. I'm here to learn, just like hopefully our listeners are too.
Fantastic. Well, the gig economy is a lot of things, okay? It's the, you know, and probably a lot of households were like mine growing up, where, you know, maybe you do craft shows or bake sales or things like that to, you know, where mom and dad would make a little bit of extra money here and there by spending some of their extra time. The gig economy really is an environment where people can, you know, either put in their extra time and leverage some of the skill sets that they've got to make a little bit extra money, or even go so far as to not have a regular job and just kind of take the different gigs that come along. Foregoing that regular paycheck for some would say the excitement of of waiting for the next opportunity.
And well, that might be exciting for some people, but other people that would scare the heck out of them.
Oh, nerve wracking for sure. I'm and as an entrepreneur, it's funny, especially a startup business. It feels like a gig economy, right?
Sure.
You're waiting for your next job, but you've also got overhead. Like it's
So you're carrying some extra stuff on your back.
Oh yeah. So I fully sympathize with that. But you know, very simply put, again, it's just kind of the opposite almost of that regular 9-to-5 salaried or hourly job.
So now I'm, because I want to have more of a conversation with you, Glenn, I'm you know, if you have a better question I should be asking, like, let's just throw it back and forth, banter mm-hmm. a little bit, because I, you know, when I start reading up on everything in gig economy, it's basically saying that it's going to have a major impact in the economic factors moving forward.
Oh, I 100% agree. And I think there's a number of different ways and reasons for that. And again, just as I was kind of starting that thought earlier of the gig economy isn't new.
No, you know, like, no. I think my parents did similar to your parents mm-hmm. that you were mentioning, and they had all sorts of stuff going on create money, right?
Mm-hmm.
And even if you were a teenager and never played in the band, you were looking for the gig.
You betcha. Absolutely. And so again, it's not new, but I think one of the reasons why the gig economy is starting to be more and more popular is there's definitely the millennial aspect of it, but I think that entrepreneurship is now cool.
Okay.
You know, if you look back 10 or, well, I'm just going to say 10 years ago, entrepreneurship, being an entrepreneur was not something that you said. You're like, I'm a business owner, or I'm a this, or I'm a that. Entrepreneur has become synonymous with a lifestyle and an excitement of going out and conquering these new worlds.
Yeah. It's interesting you would say that, because previously, I think you would say, if you said you're an entrepreneur, people would look at you and say, well, why don't you have a regular job?
Right. Exactly. You don't have an income. Go get a real job.
You must be on EI or something.
Yeah. You know, or you're exactly right. You know, it's kind of the starving student type of thing.
Sure.
And, so I think overall, if you look at how the media has changed the view of entrepreneurs through TV shows like Dragon's Den and Shark Tank, and really celebrating the success of business, and even if we go back a little bit further, I'm, I guess, a little bit of a student of business history, but I think...
You know I'm going to stop you.
Yeah, okay. I'm sorry, Richard. Yeah.
So what we'll do is we'll come back in. We'll start off with like the idea of Shark Tank and some of those shows and entrepreneurship becoming cool and a bit of the history side, and we'll tie it into the gig economy. This is Richard Lanford for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. I'm hanging out here right now with Glenn Buehler, and Glenn is my hot seat guest today. Basically, we're talking about the gig economy. Just before I went for a break, and I had to, we got to take care of some people and their needs. We were talking a little bit, or you were talking a little bit about how entrepreneurship has become really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned about how media has helped in this process with a variety of different TV shows and everything. So let's sort of kick off there with the idea that entrepreneurship has become cool and what that's meant for you, I guess, and sort of where that all came from.
Sure. Well, as I was saying before the break, I think the first CEO to kind of be cool was Lee Iacocca.
Yeah, back in the 70s?
Yeah, 70s, 80s.
80s, you know, time frame, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I wasn't really paying attention to business back then, but, you know, in reading books and just kind of understanding how entrepreneurship has become cool, he was, you know, the first guy to, you know, to go out there with a Chrysler Reliant and be the CEO in the car commercial, right? That wasn't happening otherwise. Mm-hmm. If you're watching commercials, you're not seeing the CEO.
No, you're seeing celebrities or everyday people.
Exactly. So he was the first guy to kind of put the CEO, the executive face on a brand. And fast forward a little bit later into the 80s and you've got Donald Trump, which we will not talk about any of the other things related to Trump. But, you know, he was also making real estate and doing deals cool. You know, he built a huge brand around himself. And, you know, fast forward now into the, you know, into the early 2000s and now the 2010s, where Shark Tank and Dragon's Den has made this entrepreneurship cool. Everybody wants to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
I think, especially young people, they see it as an opportunity to have freedom, lifestyle, and all this money. And
maybe.
Yeah. But, you know, that's the perception, right? And so the idea of being one's own boss in the gig economy, of kind of writing their own ticket, doing their own thing, is far more attractive, especially, I think, for millennials than it is for, you know, some of the, you know, the Gen Xers or before that, where it was, you know what, we're going to put in our 25, 35 years, whatever it is, get our pension and then
go from there. You know, it's interesting you would say that because I'm a little bit more mature, older. Oh, no, let me rephrase that. Not necessarily mature. I'm of a certain vintage.
Fair enough.
Right? Chronologically speaking. I never ever fit that sort of idea that you get a job and away you go. And I discovered that. Well, I grew up in an entrepreneurial family, and I only share this because when I was in university, I often thought, wouldn't it be cool if I could make a living and make money from doing all the different stuff I did at university, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up in a career in consulting as an analyst and discovered that it became all about contract work and everything. You know, you're either on the bench or at the beach or you're engaged, mm-hmm. right? And you want to be engaged. So it's all about gigs. So I had to share that because
yeah.
I like to sort of add in there. I've often felt I was the round peg in a square hole, mm-hmm. or a square peg in a round, not a round peg. I'd rather be the round peg than the square one. That didn't quite fit in and everything, but because of the gig, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, very interesting. And, you know, so I think changing gears a little bit, some of the other things that have made this gig economy popular was also the economic downturn that we had a little while ago.
Now, are you talking about the subprime mortgage one?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the Great Recession, as it's called, I guess.
Yeah. There was a big change, I think, in 2010. So that's probably what you're referring mm-hmm. to. But
that's right. You know, where companies are looking for ways to cut costs, and I don't know about anybody else's income statement, but mine, payroll is a huge cost on there, number one, in fact. And so, you know, when companies are looking to cut costs and stay viable, employees are unfortunately sometimes some of the first to go. So employers had to get creative in how they sourced work, and employees or now potentially the underemployed or the unemployed now have to get creative on how they make ends meet.
Yes.
So I think that really, that combined with the popularity of entrepreneurship really kind of fueled this gig economy. You know, work on what you want, when you want, and, you know, and get paid for the work that you're doing versus not being recognized by a paycheck necessarily.
On a regular basis. You know, I would suggest to you that is new in some economies, in some mm-hmm. cities in Canada, but in other cities not. So I'm going to share on my side mm-hmm. because I spent some time in Calgary, Alberta. And Calgary, Alberta, especially in the oil and gas industry, is a very contract-heavy industry
mm-hmm.
With flexible workforces. So you get used to working the gig there. But I could see more traditional areas that they would really struggle with this.
Absolutely. And I think Winnipeg is, you know, we're kind of I don't want to call us slow and steady, but we kind of are, right?
We're an intermediate.
Yeah, absolutely.
Economy.
You know, we're the type of organization the type of city, the type of culture here where, that security is craved and we're not necessarily as progressive to do some of these things like a Calgary or Toronto or New York, for example.
Where you have to have a flexible workforce.
That's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you were talking about the big change, the recession and the meltdown and everything, and then how companies are adjusting. So how do you feel companies are adjusting to the whole gig, and maybe people too?
Yeah, well, I think it's especially in the startup space. And again, I don't think we have seen the number of startups, you know, new companies starting up that we have now in past decades. Like, I think that it's a huge trend toward entrepreneurship. Everybody's kind of wanting a piece of the pie, so to speak, you know, and part of the Canadian dream here. So I think as businesses are starting up, you know, not anymore are companies going out and spending, you know, $50,000 to design a logo and a name and a brand anymore, right? They're going to websites like Fiverr or 99 Designs or those type of things where you can get work done for a fraction of the cost. Now, I'm not meaning to say that it's the same work strategically or what have you, but there's alternatives now. There's entrepreneurs capitalizing on the fact that both fresh new companies and existing companies are trying to cut costs rather than spend money with all these big expensive consulting firms.
That makes a lot of sense, actually. And you know what? And again, it's sort of like the bottom line we're talking about. I mean, it's a lot more energy to make a buck mm-hmm. than it is to save a buck. Often.
Absolutely.
You know, so we often look for ways to do that. So I think when we come back, we'll talk about how organizations are capitalizing on the gig economy. This is Richard Lanford, Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm hanging out with Glenn Buehler. Glenn, we've been talking about the gig economy, and I particularly asked you to come in and talk about that with me. Just before the break, you were talking about how a company who might have spent $50,000 previously on a logo, I think was the example, they might go through some other services to get that at a fraction of the cost. Can you sort of maybe elaborate on that a little bit more?
Sure. I think technology has really enabled people to be accessible, you know, where now that small companies are able to compete at the same level as big companies in a lot of respects, you know, putting forward the same image because the internet is kind of the great equalizer in a lot of respects, it's really enabled companies to source work from creative ways. You know, typically, you know, and Richard, sorry for the poke here, but you'll have to remind me, back in the olden days,
thanks, Glenn.
You know, companies would say, oh, I need a logo. Yeah. I'm going to flip through the yellow pages. I'm going to find a company that does logos, and I'm going to call them, and they're going to put in a bid, or they're going to do a proposal. They're going to do the song and dance, and at the end of the day, I'm going to decide who I'm going to go with, and that's it.
Yeah, pretty much. That's basically how it would work in the olden days, which I know nothing about.
You know, but now you go on to like a 99 Designs, you write a quick design brief of what you want, and then all of these artists design you a logo for free. You pick the one you want. You pay $300 or $400, whatever it is.
And you go
and you
it.
Get it.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just different.
Yeah, it's the same thing with Fiverr. I think you mentioned Fiverr mm-hmm. before. And I use that service. So anything for $5, sort of, right?
Right.
But I mean, I've hired editors and designers and I just wanted a little icon done for something, you know, and they give me a half a dozen of them and it cost me $5-$10 to get done. I'm done. I move on.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and away you go. So I guess that's all part of the gig economy. I can't help but think what this means in industry overall, like all the different, the ripple effects. I love ripple effects. And just as we see the ripples start to flow through the economy, what does that generally mean? Maybe you can provide some examples.
Yeah, well, that's a great question. I think there will be definitely a lot of the traditional industries, I guess, will have to figure out how to kind of cope with the gig economy, especially if it's going to represent, you know, upwards of 40% of the economy by 2020, as you were mentioning.
Yeah, if that happens to be the case, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So think of, you know, here's an example. So think of the bank, right? So we're looking to, you know, what does the bank care about when you're going in for a mortgage? They care about income. They care about
stability,
all those sorts of things.
Where have you been living for your life and where you've been working and stuff? Yeah, sorry.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you're exactly right. And that's what they care about. That's how they evaluate, to a certain extent, your creditworthiness and therefore whether you're going to get a mortgage or not. Imagine going into a bank 2 years from now or even today and say, I design $300 logos whenever I have the opportunity. That's my source of income.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they'll say, next.
Yeah, exactly. Right. How do you quantify that? Right. Yeah.
And so, you know, it's interesting because I see on a macro trend that, you know, that owning homes, owning cars, owning all these sorts of huge capital assets will become less popular unless the lending industry can figure out how to differently qualify their customers. And because the financial industry is not exactly the quickest moving, I mean, there's a lot of risk involved, there's a lot of regulation and all those sorts of things, I think that starts to drive a little bit more of a transient culture where people are living in apartments and so on and doing car shares and doing all of those sorts of things, which when you're moving around from place to place, well, you don't want a steady gig. You're you're kind of an ebb and flow type of person. You're kind of going where the wind takes you, and so why not just go with your laptop and work along the way, right?
You know, it's interesting you would say that because I sometimes share on the air with my clients that a little bit and some of the work I do, and some 2010, actually, right mm-hmm. after the meltdown of the economy, I had a client contact me, and they've asked me for two things, right? One is they've asked me to be periodically a talking head video for them. Mm-hmm. So I go and I do these little things, right? And I can do them anywhere.
Absolutely.
Anywhere in the world. I don't have to go to a studio. I can just do it, right? And then the other thing I do is I do on some online programming for them.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable amount of freedom. I can be in my favorite coffee shop, mm-hmm. or I can be at a park bench, or I can, and it's really changed my lifestyle. You know?
Oh, absolutely. You've got literally a 3/4-pound video studio in your pocket, a smartphone, right?
Yeah.
And it's just amazing. And maybe they're heavier than that. I don't know.
But, yeah.
But you know, again, technology has enabled all of this. And the freedom. And, you know, whether you're looking to just make ends meet with this or pick up some extra money to augment your paycheck, I mean, it's just the opportunities are endless.
Just are endless. You were saying something interesting about... I'm going to call it shared services, but you give me, if there's another term, you correct it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So lending institutions, let's just say they don't make it easy for people to buy cars or buy homes and things. So what opportunities that's creating in other places in the economy?
And you know what? I love that question. It's almost as if we planned this out.
But we didn't, actually.
We didn't.
I sort of know the answer already, but I want to talk about it, right?
Sure. And this gets me really excited because... anytime there's an opportunity, there's an entrepreneur to fill it.
Yeah, there is, you know. And if there's a problem, somebody's going to solve it.
Somebody's going to solve it.
Yeah.
And again, the way that the world's going with everybody wanting to be an entrepreneur, it's just not one person solving it. It's 10 people solving it, creating all this choice for consumers. And so you go, I'm thinking of, for example, a company called OnDeck.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know who they are.
They're basically an online lending agency.
Okay.
So if you're a business... you can get approved for a loan up to, I don't know, maybe $1 million or something. Fairly easily, they'll give you the money in 48 hours. You upload your financial statements, and basically what they do is they've got people who are tired of the stock market and, you know, looking for alternate forms of return on their capital. So basically, they have customers who say, okay, I'll put up $100,000, but I need 10 points on it, 10%. Well, then maybe I'm the guy looking for $100,000. And maybe they're going to charge me 12% interest on that $100,000, but I can get it in 48 hours.
Yeah.
And so it's unconventional. It's a higher rate of expense on interest. But all of a sudden, this OnDeck platform is now facilitating between people who have money and people who need money.
Yeah.
So they're kind of cutting out the financial, you know, the traditional financial institutions. And I'm not qualified to talk on the whole fintech movement. I might have to do some Googling if we ever want to talk about that. But you know, all this financial technology side of things is just, it's transforming even the oldest, basically one of the oldest industries on the planet, which is the financial institutions.
Yeah, and they're making finances readily available to organizations.
Exactly.
When you're talking about that, I started to think about funding.
Mm-hmm.
Crowdfunding.
Yes.
You know, and there's another thing too. And I had a friend of mine who started a cafe, mm-hmm. and he had limited funds. I think he had maybe $30,000 to start it. But part of his business plan, he put in crowdfunding,
mm-hmm.
and it was fascinating to watch him actually get the capital he needed to start his company.
Absolutely. Well, and yeah, it's so, again, where there's a will, there's a way, right? And
yeah.
And technology is really facilitating that. And the gig economy is also making that happen. Because you think of this, we call it rapid prototyping in the computer world.
Yes.
But it's also that way for businesses too, right? Where you can take a concept to execution in such a short period of time now because of all of this gig economy. You know, again, getting a logo turned around within a week versus hiring an agency. And I mean, no disrespect to all of my agency friends out there, by the way. But you know, it's you can all of a sudden turn around this rapid prototype of a business. You can get it funded through crowdfunding. You can start selling it selling your product or service online immediately. And you can fail within a month.
There you go. Glenn, we got to take a short break. When mm-hmm. we come back, we'll start talking a little bit more about the gig economy and some of the things that are going on. This is Richard Lannan for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm hanging out with Glenn Bueller, and we're talking about the gig economy. You know, Glenn, just before the break, we're talking a little bit about rapid prototyping and getting stuff out the market really quick. You know, even the independent professional today is not so independent,
mm-hmm.
not by themselves.
Right.
What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I couldn't agree more. You know, it's interesting. A lot of companies, you know, and I'm guilty of this too. You know, when you're evaluating a vendor to go with for whatever it is that you're doing, you know, sometimes you look at the strength of their team.
Sure.
You know, you might say, okay, I've got two different options. I can go with this guy or this guy. But this person has specialists in all these areas, whereas this person's just on their own. They're a generalist. And I feel guilty doing that because in this connected world that we have, and especially facilitated because of the gig economy, even that sole practitioner, if we can call them that, is connected to all these experts that they can use on an on-demand basis.
Yeah, I agree. And that's sort of why I wanted to raise it, because I know that I've had, I've run teams for other companies, and I've actually have run my own companies and with people that reporting to me and stuff. And then I've done the independent thing too. And the one thing I've discovered, and this is my lesson learned, is that with things like Upworks, which you and I have talked about, things like Fiverr, like you in Upworks, for example, you can build a whole global team and have those people on your bench. You have bench strength and you just activate them when you need them at that point in time.
Oh, absolutely. And it you know, going from the person who's trying to surround yourself with a team, it needs a mindset shift.
Yeah.
You know, even for me, sometimes I have a couple different offices elsewhere, both in Winnipeg and in, you know, and in other cities. And sometimes it's so hard for me not to want to just kind of reach out and touch the employee. You know what I mean? Like where it's kind of out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, those kind of things. That reminds me actually of a situation where I was doing a project with a major transportation organization where their lease got changed in their building. Mm. And they discovered that they actually had to take two floors and merge them.
Oh,
so
wow.
The same amount of people, but now only one floor. And so what they did was is they brought in technology that allowed to have the group come to work in their office Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 1 week, Tuesday, Thursday, and then the other group they'd switch, right? Mm-hmm. So there was always the opposite. The biggest challenges the managers had was that how would we know if they're working or not?
That's right. Yeah. Exactly. And I think, you know, since employees love the flexibility and management loves the accountability, the gig economy is actually the best of both worlds.
Well, you work all the time.
Well, you work all the time, and the manager, or in this case, the client, is paying for the output rather than the amount of time that has gone into it. Because how often as employers do we pay somebody for 40 hours a week but get 20 hours worth
of work? They're sitting there.
Oh,
yeah,
it just happens. And it might not even just be because they're not trying, but maybe we've given them bad instruction or bad training or
too many meetings.
Too many meetings, all those sorts of things. So I really do believe that the gig economy solves a lot of efficiency challenges within organizations today. And, you know, bringing it back to our original kind of topic here, it is a very efficient way to build a team, an on-demand team of all these professionals if you're a sole practitioner or a small company. Like, it just makes so much sense, I think.
And you can set it up and administrate it pretty quick.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, there's lots of different services out there, I mean, that people can get involved in terms of leveraging the gig economy for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, perhaps maybe controversial one in Winnipeg here is Uber potentially coming.
Oh, yeah. Uber is always controversial wherever it goes.
Wherever it goes.
Yeah.
And I got to say, you know, when I'm in Toronto, I Uber.
Yeah.
That's what
yeah.
I do. It's less expensive. It's more, you know, I found it very convenient and those kind of things. It makes sense. And that's, you know, that's a gig economy business.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting you would say that because my work is very client focused.
Right.
So I'll share this with you is that I now have clients that say to me, when you leave the airport, Uber.
Yeah.
They tell me to not take a taxi or any, because I mean, I get reimbursed for the client work.
Yeah.
Well, they're saving money by having me use
absolutely.
Uber as opposed to a limousine or a taxi or whatever. So I do see that also from the other side perspective.
For sure.
Yeah. It's interesting you would say that because another one, so I'm going to share a few things too.
Yeah.
One of the other ones I like is Car2Go. Have you ever used Car2Go?
Oh, I have not.
You have not. Do you know what Car2Go is?
I could probably piece it together, but go ahead.
No. Who's interviewing who? Yeah. Some cities like, in Canada, be probably Calgary, Toronto, Vancouver. I'm not too sure about Montreal, but there are little cars that are on different parts of the city, all over the city, and you have a little app, and when you need an automobile, you just pop on the app, book the car, go pick the car up. And you use it, and then you just park it in a Car2Go spot, and then you walk away from it. The interesting thing is that it's basically renting a car.
Oh, sure.
But you don't, the insurance, the gas, and the car rental are all combined.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it's kind of like my exotic car club business. So right. I, and not meaning to plug my own thing here.
But it's the same idea.
And though I'm sure it's not a Lamborghini that you get to pick up at any of these
spots. No, it's one of those little tiny mini cars, actually.
That's probably a smarter business model, but very interesting. Well, and I just had a thought here, Richard. One of the things that I'm not sure about the gig economy and its staying power, because I really do believe that it will be here for the long run. I think it's a lifestyle that people have. But as entrepreneurs now, how do we build a culture? How do we build a culture if our employees are not dedicated to us? I know that's something that I worry about when I outsource work or look at temporary workers or that kind of thing. Are they going to understand my brand, and what we stand for as a company? Because I think that's still important. No matter how the workforce changes, the people working behind the brand need to understand what that brand promise is and deliver on it. And you're only as good as the people who are working with you and for you to deliver on your vision as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, so what is that connection? What's that loyalty point?
That's right.
It's interesting. I recall changes in the economy, lots of things happening, but I think it was often once said that baby boomers were loyal to the company, Generation X were loyal to the relationship. So I don't know what the millennials will be loyal to. And that's no offense, millennials. It's just sort of the jury's out.
I know. And I think I maybe shouldn't say this, but I think, it's kind of it's a self-interest is kind of where it's gone. And it's gone from being company men to being what's in it for me.
Yeah.
And that's why the gig economy works so well, is because they don't really report to anybody. It's, I'm putting in this time when I'm interested in doing it, and I'll take the projects I want. And that doesn't happen in the normal world, right?
No. You're often in a traditional business, you're assigned your work.
That's right.
And the organization, if it's a top-down strategy, that's, this is the direction we're going in.
Mm-hmm.
If you're fortunate enough to get involved in bottom-up strategies, I do a lot of strategic work.
Sure.
Then that's very different. That's a lot more creative and everything that you might have some say. But you're right. The gig economy does present some
challenges for sure.
Yeah.
But going back to your other question, what other things are out there? Uber, there's Etsy. Etsy's a very cool store. It's like an online
craft store?
Craft store.
I have no
idea.
A
craft show or whatever the case is, where people are manufacturing all these sorts of things. I know people who are manufacturing phone cases and stickers all right here in Winnipeg and selling it on Etsy and doing really, really well.
So that's amazing. That's
absolutely
amazing. But then that might be the quiet side. If somebody wanted to get in touch with you to talk a bit more about the gig economy, how could they do that?
You know what? I'm always on LinkedIn. That's maybe a great way to find me. Just head on to LinkedIn, social media platform, search my name, Glenn Bueller, and you'll find me on there.
Find you on there. Glenn, what a show. Always a privilege. I mean, I've always find it a pleasure to have you on the show. You just always embrace every single topic that I want to do. If you had a final thought for listeners, what would it be?
If you're a gigger, don't be afraid to try new things and figure out how you can make some extra money doing these new things. If you're an employer, don't be afraid to try giggers.
Yeah, you'd be surprised, right?
You'd be surprised, absolutely.
Task workforce, task sourcing, I think they call it.
That's right.
Thank you, Glenn. It's been a pleasure. And listeners, thank you for joining in. I really appreciate when you're part of the conversation. I like to think you are. And if you have a thought, an idea for a show, a guest, just send me an email at richard@setforsuccess.ca. And please do remember to do your best, invest in the success of others, and make your journey count.